Welcome to the Alcohol Addiction Podcast. My name is Lee Davey. I'm not an alcoholic. I refuse to be anonymous. I'm someone that doesn't drink alcohol, and I spend every waking moment of my life helping other people do the same. How are you doing, folks? Hope everybody is okay. I'm going to be short and sweet with this intro because I got to whiz across the road and take my daughter to ballet class, something that I'm spending more and more time with my daughter. I don't think for a million years that I would take my daughter to ballet class if I was still someone who would be drinking alcohol. I would be firmly ensconced in this belief system that I had to work, I had to look after myself, and that it was my wife's job to take my daughter to ballet class. But being someone who doesn't drink alcohol has some clarity to it, right? And I'm able to see what is most important to me in life. And, you know, I am not going to be able to experience my daughter taking ballet class for the first time too often, right? It's not going to happen, you know? And these moments, these last moments, as Sam Harris calls them, we never know when these last moments are. We never really know when the last time we go skiing will be. We never really know the last time we'll be able to hold our daughter in our hands. We never know when the last time we'll be able to see them go to ballet class. So as someone who has an 18-year-old son, these realities of these last time moments are really important to me. So I'm really grateful that I don't drink alcohol because it allows me to have that clarity to see what is the right thing to do in life and to grow and to evolve as a person. And that's why I do this work. And also as well, we don't know when our last drink of alcohol is going to be, do we? On the Truth About Alcohol intensive, we take a vow, right? We take a vow that we're going to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol ever again. But what does that mean? Does that mean we'll never drink alcohol again? Is that what it means? I mean, you would think that it does, right? Because that's what we're saying. We're taking a vow. We're going to be someone who doesn't drink alcohol. However, I don't believe that someone who doesn't drink alcohol, you know, that statement, I don't believe it's just kind of wrapped up in the alcohol. So, for example, I became someone who doesn't drink alcohol in 2009. And 3 years later, suffering pain through my divorce, feeling lonely, feeling ugly, washed up with baggage, thinking that all the most beautiful, amazing women in the world had already been taken because I was 35 and that I was going to die old lonely on my deathbed, I began drinking again. I suddenly thought that there was value in drinking, or I didn't give a fuck that there was any value or whatever. I just lost myself in a malaise, something that I didn't see coming. But I never, ever considered myself as someone who was a drinker. Like, I never rewound back to 2009. For me, I was someone who doesn't drink alcohol. But unfortunately, I went through a divorce, one of the most troubling lonely, scary, hurtful experiences you could ever imagine. And there's no way of understanding how that's going to affect you. How it affected me is I ended up having a drink. I ended up drinking for a month. But I never said to myself, and I never say to you folks, do I? Oh, I have been someone who doesn't drink alcohol since 2012. No, it's 2009. That was when I took the vow. Yeah, I slipped up. Yeah, I had a drink. But I think drinking alcohol is part of the process. Now, that doesn't give you carte blanche to go out and have a drink. Oh, Lee said it's easy. I can have a drink if I want, and I'm still someone who doesn't drink alcohol. No, you do everything in your power, and you use your toolkit. I mean, the important thing is, when people like me go through a divorce and we end up drinking alcohol, and I share that with you, that allows you to prepare better for that eventuality. Yeah, it's not easy to prepare for these things, you know, a death of a child, splitting up with a partner, a death of a parent, a death of an animal or a pet, like, you know, losing your job, losing everything. It's really difficult to cater for these things. So just know that just because you have a drink somewhere along this process, whether this is 1 month, 2 months, 3 days, 2 years, 1 year, okay, you're still someone who doesn't drink alcohol if that is ultimately what you want to become. Okay, yeah, that is ultimately someone you want to become. Stick with being a member of Strive. Stick with doing the Truth About Alcohol experiences. Stick with listening to this podcast, okay? But most importantly, and I said it first, but I'm going to reiterate, stick with Strive. That's your family. That's your home. They're the people who understand you. They're the people who will pick you back up when you fall down, okay? Holly, we love you, okay? We love you. Anyway, I'm going to go on to our next guest. His name is Bruce Buffer. Bruce Buffer has been the official voice of the Octagon for the Ultimate Fighting Championship since 1997 and for many other mixed martial arts events worldwide, and is recognized internationally as the voice of mixed martial arts. The UFC is seen worldwide on satellite and cable TV pay-per-view. He was also on Spike TV's hit series UFC Unleashed and Ultimate Fight Night, and now appears on all Fox Network televised UFC events and pay-per-views viewed by millions of people worldwide. Bruce is classified as a true entrepreneur, an announcer, an entertainer, a motivational speaker who keeps the viewing public attentive and excited about products and events that he represents. I first bumped into Bruce and interviewed him in the Bahamas in January. I was invited there by PokerStars, as was Bruce, and I got the opportunity to interview him for 5 minutes about poker, because Bruce is also, let's call him, a very interested, excited and talented poker player. He's not a professional poker player, but he loves playing poker. And I was blown away by his warmth, his vulnerability, but most importantly, his success and his confidence and his ability, and not his ability, his willingness to talk about what were the right things that happened to him in life in order for him to be a success. There is only one official voice of the Octagon. There is only one man who stands in the center of the UFC ring shouting, "It's time," and that guy is Bruce Buffer. So how did he get there? Now, this is really important, because when you do the freedom module of the intensive, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about, what is it that we want to do when we get older, what is it that we want to do? It's like going back to being a child again. What is it we want to be when we get older, right? Now imagine you love the UFC and you want to be the voice of the Octagon. You want to replace Bruce Buffer. You want to be in that position. Well, why not you? Bruce got there, and as you'll tell in this interview that I did with him, he didn't get there because he trained his voice from an early age to be the official voice of the Octagon. It doesn't work like that, right? But he starts by having a goal. It starts by having some belief. It starts by doing some planning, and most of all, taking a lot of action. So I hope you enjoy what Bruce has to talk about. We don't really talk about alcohol. We're talking about success. But going back to what I said at the beginning of this, you know, the whole point of Striving the Truth about alcohol is to help people to become people that don't drink alcohol. And that is a greater thing, much greater thing, is just somebody who doesn't drink alcohol. It's about being the better versions of ourselves. And Bruce Buffer is very definitely the very best version of himself. And let's see if we can learn from him. Take care of yourselves. Oh, one last thing. We do have Duncan, Dave and Brent are currently doing the taster, and a couple of other people have contacted me. They want to start doing a taster as well. We've got two. I'm looking for another three people, make a team of five. If you want to join the taster, send me an email to thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com straight away, and we'll make that happen for you, right? Thanks a lot for listening. Podcast, it's wonderful to have you on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, my friend. Thank you for having me on.
I love it. I love speaking to very successful people, because, as you know, like, one of the things that happens when you know, you get embroiled in addictions such as alcoholism and you kind of lose all your, you know, your spunk, I guess, you know, your courage and your bravery. And so I always like to get some super successful people on and try to pick your brains and figure out what it is that made you, you know, the great personality that you are. So we'll go right back. When you was a child, Bruce, and you thought about the future, what did you want to become?
When I was a child, I was very much into film and very much a movie buff. My dad introduced me to film and very much into the boxing world. I trained in boxing, trained a lot of sports, but I wanted to be an actor. You know, I wanted to be like Steve McQueen and John Wayne and, you know, the idols I grew up with watching, Errol Flynn, one of my favorites of all time. And that was my goal, and actually studied for it along with the other studying. But I started finding myself getting very much interested in business and the art of the sale and the art of buying something for $5 and selling it for $20, you know, whatever the product may be. Because to me, all business is the same. It's just the product that's different. It all comes down to marketing. And I got really carried away in the marketing world and started making very, very, very good money at a very young age, fresh out of high school. And I went to college for 2 years, started my own business when I was 19, my very first corporation. I never looked back. I never went back to college. And I stayed in the business world.
I know
you. That's what set me off at an early stage of life.
I know your father was a hugely influential man for you. Tell me how he was such a good mentor for you.
My dad never graduated high school, and he probably had what I would consider to be a below or near genius IQ. He would read incessantly, learned everything he knew about life in the streets by doing it, because college teaches you knowledge, but it doesn't teach you application. You've got to go out and cut the mustard. You got to go out and try and learn what it's like to fail in order to succeed and vice versa. And my dad, without a college education or even a high school diploma, wound up running and being vice president of sales and of Fortune 500 companies. We changed locations a lot as kids, and we moved to different cities, and it was all a great experience. Taught me a lot. And he was also a great writer, and he wrote books and such, and he gave up the corporate world to become a writer, had his first book published within a year. And he was a big collector of military and collectibles, and I learned even more about sales, because I used to travel the country with him, along with my brother Brian and my mom, and we would work at antique collectible gun and artifact shows, and, you know, not hunters, just collecting. Mm. And we became experts. He became an expert, and my brother became experts in the field of collecting various things. I collect movie memorabilia, sports memorabilia, guns and artifacts, but I'm not a hunter.
What's your favorite thing that you have that you've collected?
Movie-wise, there's a great Christmas movie called It's a Wonderful Life with James Stewart. I don't know if you've seen it, but yeah. It's a very big Christmas movie. And I have a 7-foot-high original poster of that, which is one of less than 6 known to exist. Mm. And it's so beautiful. If I was ever broke and homeless, I'd probably have it underneath my arm while I'm walking the streets. You know, it means so much to me. I know I could sell it and eat, but, you know, Certain things have certain values to them.
Yeah, I understand. How did your father define failure, and how did he teach you around that area when you were younger?
Well, always face your fears, always accept your mistakes, and learn from them. And that caused me to – oh, and he had a great saying. He said, win like you're used to it and lose like it doesn't bother you, because my dad taught me how to gamble when I was 9. He taught me blackjack, poker, and he taught me about horse racing. And he said the only way to follow a horse is with a shovel. Don't bet on him. So he had, you know, theories of life that I followed, and what I call bufferisms, which caused me to create my own. And the thing about the gaming world, you know, it teaches you a lot. It teaches you a lot on succeed and everything else. And again, in business, you have to know what it's like to get knocked down the canvas, just like as a fighter in the UFC. You have to be able to pick yourself up and stand up and move forward stronger than ever, in the great words of Rocky. It's very, very true. So the mental similarities between fighting and going through life and business and personal life are very, very similar.
So you're talking there about finding the success in failure and not letting failure hold you back.
Yeah, you know, basically through what he taught me and through my own experiences, I realized that the first time you do something, and let's say it's a mistake, okay? The first time is not a mistake. It's a learning experience. Learn from it. Mm. If you do it again, then it's a mistake. Then you're making a mistake. You're not making a mistake the first time. Mm. You're learning from an experience. So learn from it. And be honest with yourself. That's the big thing. People are dishonest with themselves. I have never had an addiction issue. Mm-hmm. I've certainly enjoyed things maybe more than I should in life, you know, and that can stand for everything from food to sex, to you name it, you mm-hmm. know, it, moderation in life and everything. But addictive personality is not my issue, except I've had many friends that have gone through it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a self-discipline. You have to be honest with yourself, and there's a self-discipline involved, and certainly self-respect above all.
Yeah, I said when you said then that when you first make a mistake, we have to learn from it. I think that is exceptionally important. So, like, if you're listening to this, folks, and you have a drink, and you know that's not a failure if we learn from it. But if we don't learn from it, and we're not aware, and we're not thinking about what we're doing in that moment, and kind of like putting a rational lens on it, then it will be deemed a failure. It'll be a waste, actually, because it would be a good moment for you to learn from what you're doing. So. I think that's what Bruce is saying there. Was there ever a worry there, Bruce, about your dad being so successful and you admiring him so much? Did you ever fear that you wouldn't be able to fill his boots? How did that pop up in your mind?
No, I never feared that I wouldn't be able to fill his boots. If anything, he was motivating to me to not necessarily fill his boots, but to fill my boots. Mm. My dad showed me the way, and I've always been very independent of always been of a leadership mentality. So it's not that I was trying to prove my dad. I love pleasing my dad, of course. You know, what son who has a great relationship with his dad or his mom don't enjoy pleasing their parents. But it was more that he was very supportive, and he was very tough on me. And that toughness paid off and made me tough. You know, we're talking about a man who and a woman who are from the World War II generation, the toughest generation, you know, in the past, in my opinion, with all that they've gone through, you know, of this century, of last century and into this century. So I just absorbed and just learned. So he was just a motivating factor for me. And my businesses, I'm so driven to succeed and so driven to do the best I can. You know, whether it's all about being the best you can. You step on a path in life, you want to be the best you can, do the best job you can. And like I say on my podcast, it's time at the end. I go, then you're winning because you're doing the best you can be. I don't care if you want to be the best busboy, the best waiter, the best actor, the best podcast host, or, you know, the best CEO of a business. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It's about being the best you can be and being happy with your results.
I like that. It's almost like, you know, looking in the mirror at the end of the day and, you know, reaffirming to yourself, I did the best that I could have done today. You know,
I look in the mirror every morning when I shave and I go, it's time. And when I say it's time, it means it's time to have the best day I can be, be the best person I can be.
And mentors are really super important. You talked about your father there being a mentor. People who come to Truth About Alcohol and Strive, you know, they're looking at myself and our ambassador team as mentors as well. Hugely important in all areas of life to get you up and going. When you think about the ideal professional mentor for you, Bruce, what is it that they had that you think are good qualities for people to look for in someone like that?
Honesty, strength, charisma. leadership qualities to stand in front and to help direct people to be the best they can be that are following them. Because in life, life is like a pyramid. At the top of the pyramid, whether it's a family or a business, in the family, there's the parents going all the way down to all the relatives. Mm. In a business, there's a CEO going down to their vice presidents or sales managers, down to the people that run the warehouse and ship the boxes, and the secretaries and the male and females answering the phones, taking the orders. That makes up the base. Without a strong base, the top falls down and becomes weak. So everything in life is a pyramid, and it's all about leading by example and showing good leadership and gaining respect from the people underneath you, whether it's your kids or whether it's your workers.
What do you think about friendships and networks in terms of letting them grow and happen organically, or saying to yourself, hang on a minute, if I'm going to be the average of the five people I spend my most time with, I better find five people who are going to define the values that I want in life. And then not manufacture it, but say to yourself, no, I'm not going to mess around here. I want friends that have certain values. What's your thoughts around that?
No, it's, you know, you lay with pigs, you smell like crap, right? Mm. So it's the bottom line. I mean, you are who you surround yourself with has a tendency to dictate, you know, who you are, or what you're striving for. So there came a time in my life, I think in my 20s, when I realized a lot of people I was hanging around with weren't as motivated as me. They were not going to help me go forward. If anything, they're going to slow me down and drag me down. And it comes a point when you just have to cut people off. Mm. It's a matter of what's best for you. And if you have somebody that's causing you potential angst and maybe exposing you to things you've already been at, you've already been through, you have no interest in going through again, you've matured past this point, then you've got to make a choice in life. You know, and if you go through life, you're lucky to find one or two great friends in your life anyway. Everybody else are acquaintances, you know, and people you have experiences with going through. It's impossible to be best friends with everybody, but the friends you choose, it should be a 50-50 relationship. They should be just like a relationship with a woman. You know, it's strengths and weaknesses, right? Strength and weaknesses create strengths in relationships, and that stands for friendships as well.
What opportunities have you turned down in your life, Bruce?
Many, without going into detail, many.
Any major ones and anything to learn from them?
Sure. You know, it's all about timing, making the right choice. You know, certain business decisions where I didn't see it was right turned out to be something that was mega gold. Mm. But for the most part, what I have chosen to go into, whether it be the management of my legendary brother, Michael Buffer, the Let's Get Ready to Rumble boxing sports and entertainment announcer, for the last 27 years of his career, and making sure that trademark was phrased was done properly and putting him in all the proper things to build his career over the last 27 years, made the right choices, made the right choice going with the UFC, believing it was going to be the biggest thing ever in sports, which it's become. Mm. And I knew that in the thin days when I was losing money, just even working with the show, but I knew it was going to be big, stuck with it. You have to stick with things. Whether it's an investment in real estate, you know, the years it takes to get a return. You know, it comes in very different forms and variations.
I mean, what you're talking about there is risk, right? Like, how do we advise people to take, not just take more risk, but take sensible risk? Or do we have to take some risks sometimes that are not sensible? What's your thoughts on risk?
no risk, no reward. Depends on the level of the risk you want to take. You don't want to be stupid and take, I hate that word stupid, excuse me, but you don't want to make the wrong decision and take a risk that's obviously a risk that has no upside. And it's just you're getting caught up in the Kool-Aid of the situation, I call it, where you're thinking it will work out and I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that. Because you're just thinking about the grandiose thing. You're not thinking smart and going to point A, achieving that, and then there's point B, and then there's point C. People just want to get rich and they want the easy route sometimes. It doesn't work that way, folks, but it can work that way. I mean, in a rare situation of timing. But it's all about making the right choices, educating yourself on your choice, getting as much knowledge so that when you step on that path, you're making the right choice at the right path. And again, we get back to being the best you can be. You have to do your homework. Mm. And if you're not passionate about it, that's probably going to be the thing that's going to get against you first. Mm. Pick something you're passionate about so you'll fight for it harder, you'll enjoy learning and doing it more, and it's a lot more fun. And if you can monetize that, then you've found a dream job.
I was talking to my boy the other day, Bruce. He's 18, so he's going through that really tough period, you know, where he doesn't really want to leave childhood because the world's out there and it's big and scary, and he was getting all flustered about everything that he has to do, and I said to him, look, dude, you need to just focus on the basics, right? You know, you need to put 10% of what you're earning away, you need to start putting some people ahead of yourself, etc. How important are these foundational building blocks of our core values and stuff like that in our lives?
They're all important. Everything is important because everything's a reference point. Everything is a point of education. A lot of problems people have is they're not willing to open up their eyes and ears. They think they have everything down, that they know everything. Well, no, you don't. Mm. Every day you should wake up wanting to learn something new and be open. Be open to people's opinion and people you respect because of their abilities. And maybe you have to change your opinion. So don't be a hardhead. Be open, but be smart. Always be smart. And don't, I'll say it again, follow your passion, but don't get caught up in the Kool-Aid. If you understand what I'm saying.
Rao, you play poker. I know you love the game. And I imagine there are many times that you've been lucky in life and you've been unlucky in life as well. What are your thoughts on luck? Because you get a lot of people in world, you know, the cynics and the pessimists who believe that people are just damn lucky. There's other people who think in things like the law of attraction, that if they just close their eyes and think about it, that luck will come to them. What's your views on luck?
Give me a favor. Give me that question again. You went blank on me for a second.
Oh, sorry. I'm talking about luck. Okay. So we know there's luck in poker, right? And we know there's luck in life. And
I got you.
Yeah. Some people who think they can manufacture it. Some people think, you know, they're just going to meditate and it's going to arrive. What do you think about luck?
You know, luck is like you need timing. There's always a little bit of luck. I live life by a system of what I call BSC, which means ball, skill, and confidence. Let's say I'm stepping down to a blackjack table. You know, if I don't feel good about myself, I'm not going to put money on the table and gamble. But at the same time, I realize I'm going to need a little bit of luck when I'm in a poker game or a poker tournament. You know, my BSC is very strong because I consider myself a very good poker player on a very top level. Hmm. But you always still need a little bit of luck when you go all in and you're waiting for that fifth card to hit the river in the middle of the table. Many times I've been knocked out because a guy had a 2% chance to get that card that could beat me. Right. But the odds were in my favor to make the call to the all in call, and he gets the card. That's luck. You know, that's called a bad beat. And that's the way life is sometimes. So win like you're used to it, lose like it doesn't bother you, and keep moving. But don't live your life based on winning, based on luck. In other words, if you're going to go out and say, well, I hope I get lucky today. Well, it'd be nice to get lucky. But you know what? You're the governor of your own destiny. Ultimately, you're the one that's got to make the decision. So don't rely solely on luck. But yes, a little bit of luck is always part of the equation.
Yeah, it's like those 2% chances that you get in poker, they're also going to happen in life as well. So you need to prepare yourself for them, don't you?
Absolutely. Poker's just like life.
When have you panicked about your career, Bruce?
I haven't. You know, maybe I got nervous my first UFC. Maybe when I lost a company and when I was younger, not knowing what to do, deciding where I was going to go forward. But I've always survived. I always picked myself up on my bootstraps, and I've always gone out. And then as a result, I've always gone on to bigger and better things.
Is there anything you do in your life that keeps you centered and keeps you away from that panic? I mean, because I know, for example, for myself now, I travel around the world interviewing poker players, as you know, and then in my spare time, I'm trying to build the alcohol business that I, you know, trying to help people quit alcohol. And I'm always panicking in my mind about those type of things, but I try not to let them roll out into my life. And I have different ways of doing that. How do you keep yourself centered?
Meditation. spending time with my family, staying grounded, get back from a show where it's like being Elvis Presley for the weekend with all the attention, which is wonderful and I appreciate it, but I like to get back and get grounded to what real life is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you are a very grounded individual. I could see that in you straight away when I met you in the Bahamas.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
I guess that comes from your parents as well, though, right?
It all comes from my parents, and the rest comes from what I learned from them and went on to conquer and learn about myself. You know, self-values are very important.
I'm always thinking about the meaning of life, not necessarily, you know, God and stuff like that, but what am I doing here, you know? What is my purpose? How am I going to spend my time today? And because we spend 80,000 hours plus in our work or career or job or whatever you want to call it, I think the two are, you know, inextricably linked. I mean, what are your thoughts about work and jobs and purpose? Do you think that we all need to be shooting for a job that we feel like this is purpose driven?
Yeah, I mean, in the best of both worlds. I get back to what I said before. If you can find something you're interested in and passionate about, and you can monetize that, then think about it. You're waking up living a lifestyle. You're not just going to work. When you do something you're not into and you're not passionate about, and you're just there for the paycheck, I hope you enjoy it to whatever level, because then you're just waking up every day and you're going to work to get a paycheck, right? Now, granted, a paycheck is great. I'll be the first one to cash it, but I'm not about the paycheck. I'm about my love for the job. But then again, it all depends on your financial position in life. You know, if you live paycheck to paycheck, you have to do what you have to do. But the choices ultimately are all up to you, the governor of your own destiny. If you're not happy, find something you'd be happy with. Life's a long time. Hopefully you live a long life. You might as well approach it and go after what you're passionate about. So if you love film, find some work in film. If you love sports, find some work in sports. If you love restaurants, then be a waiter and enjoy the hell out of it. Make as much money as you possibly can, or be a chef. You know, find out what you're passionate about, learn about it, see what's available, and try to monetize it. You might find something you really enjoy doing, and then it's a lifestyle.
And one last question, because I know we're coming up on time now. For the people out there who, you know, they've been drinking alcohol for decades, they've just stopped drinking, so they're now starting to think about, you know, greater things that they're capable of in the world, Bruce. When it comes to being success and finding something that you love to do in life, some passion, what manageable steps do you think that people should be incorporating in their lives to fill what we call the white space, you know, the space that has suddenly presented itself because they're no longer drinking?
Well, you don't want to create stress for yourself when you can avoid it. Life's very stressful as it is. So I would say, are you talking about just avoiding the temptation or going back for the drink?
No, not avoiding the temptation so much, but Now what happened to me, see, Bruce, I stopped drinking alcohol and I felt very powerful. But then I looked around my life and I thought, everything about my life is wrong. Like, my wife doesn't like me. I'm not having sex. I hate my job. I don't like where I live. I'm not a great father. So I started to think to myself, I need to change all this, right? But I'm like a confident guy, you know? But there's a lot of people in my community who are not as confident. So they stop drinking alcohol and it's like, boom, what next? I have so much wrong with my life. So you're a really successful guy. You know, I was just thinking, what manageable steps can people take to get themselves on that ladder, to give themselves some courage and some bravery so they can achieve great things over the long term?
Well, I hope it worked out for you. You didn't quit your job and get divorced. And if you did, I hope it still worked out for you, by the way.
I did all of those things.
Okay. Well, that's what I thought. That's what I figured.
Yeah.
You've got to do what's best for you, because the bottom line is, it comes down to one simple theory too. If you don't love yourself and respect yourself, you're not going to find love and respect for other people. You got to be happy within your own temple. And that's really where people need to work on, when they wake up being happy with themselves, and then being able to make the right choices as a result of being confident and happy within themselves.
If the Truth About Alcohol philosophy jives with you and you want to become someone that doesn't drink alcohol, then there are several options available to you, okay? According to the research carried out by Janice and James Prochaska, there are 6 stages of change when it comes to defeating an addiction. And let me assure you, that is your problem. It is an addiction, right? Now, these 6 stages of change are as follows. 1, pre-contemplation. 2, contemplation. 3, preparation. 4, action, 5 maintenance, and 6 termination. And translated into truth about alcohol philosophy, these categories become this, right? Number 1, the death effect. Number 2, visualization. Number 3, incubation. Number 4, ready, steady, go. Number 5, transformation. And number 6, service. And that just makes a nice little acronym, STRIVE. Ha! That's why I did that, right? So these 6 stages of the truth about alcohol are not fixed in stone, right? They're fluid, and you'll move between these stages depending on a variety of different factors. But understanding where you are on this spectrum is really critical, okay? Now, number 1, the first category you're going to be in, which the Prochaska's called pre-contemplation, and I'm calling the death effect, that's when you really are struck by the zombification of societal condition. You have no idea that alcohol is a problem, that alcoholism exists. You just think that alcohol is fucking brilliant, and that is the end of, right? And that will not be affecting you right now because you're here listening to this. But that is that first level, that first category, the death effect. At the second level, contemplation, as the Prochaska's call it, or for me, visualization, this is where you start to think and question the role that alcohol has in your life, right? And as you're thinking about this and you're pondering and you're kind of visualizing kind of like, you know, how alcohol is having a negative effect in your life and what it could possibly be like if it's not in your life anymore, you may have joined the Alcohol Addiction Podcast and listened to this. You may have headed over to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and joined our email list. You might be reading our blog post. You might have picked up a few books and started reading on those. At the third stage is called preparation, right? Or what we call incubation. And this is where you might go a little bit further. And you're now starting not only to kind of listen to podcasts and read some books, but you're actually preparing to change, right? The idea that you could potentially be someone that doesn't drink alcohol is starting to incubate. And you could, at this stage, have joined a community forum like Strive. Or you might have joined NIST Naked Minds forum or Hip Sobriety's Facebook group or something. But you're starting to prepare for change. The fourth category is action, or what we call ready, steady, go. And this is where you really are now starting to take some real solid action. And if you're ready to take action, then you should take the Truth About Alcohol Taster. The Truth About Alcohol Taster is a 27-day program. You can join the program whenever you like. You just go to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk and you can find the links there to join up, or you can email me at thetruthaboutalcohol@gmail.com and I'll sort you out. You join basically a group and you can just work on being someone who doesn't drink alcohol for 27 days to give it a little bit of a feel. We'll introduce you to the Truth About Alcohol philosophy, our 3 modules of truth, awareness, and freedom. We'll learn to help you see the truth about alcohol, why you drink, why it's so difficult to stop, raise awareness of that truth internally so you can start to change some of those neurological pathways, those thought process and belief systems around alcohol. And then freedom, how do you assert yourself back into a society of people that don't drink alcohol? You do the homework on Strive, you get an assignment every day from myself, and one of the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors will lead you along the way. So that's kind of the action stage. The fifth stage is called maintenance, or what we call transformation. This is where the work really takes off, right? Now, it's really important to understand that moving between the incubation phase and the ready, steady, go phase, you know, so whilst you're kind of like preparing to take action, that could take anywhere up to 6 months. And once you've started to take action, the actual maintenance phase, which is what we call transformation, the stage where you are really working on becoming someone that doesn't drink alcohol permanently, that phase can take up to 5 years, right? It can take that long. It certainly takes 6 months, 6 months plus for you to really nail it or give yourself a good shot at this. And for that reason, we've created the intensive. The Truth About Alcohol Intensive, it's a year, an annual subscription where we get really deep into the truth about alcohol, raising awareness of that truth and working out how to be free of it. And we're up to like 70 plus coaching videos. You work with all the Truth About Alcohol ambassadors and myself. It's a great, great process, okay? One of the big mistakes people make is they'll take the taster, so they start to take action, and then once they finish the taster, they don't continue into the maintenance phase, and that can lead them fall back into some of those earlier categories. So it's really important to do the intensive and get through that transformation phase. And then finally, 6, termination, as the Prochaskas call it, or I like to call it service. This is where it doesn't matter what happens now, you're never going to drink alcohol. It doesn't matter, you're never triggered, nothing ever happens, you're just fucking done with it, right? And that's where I am right now. And this is where we at the Truth About Alcohol can offer you some roles to, you know, give back to the community, give back to the world, and help me create this movement of a million people that don't drink alcohol. And that is to extend yourself into the roles of either a Strive ambassador, where you lead in the Strive movement and really are a rock helping new people come to Strive, or you can become a Truth About Alcohol ambassador, where we pay you to take control of the taster groups and the intensive groups and really work with people who are ready to take the action phase. So if you are ready right now, okay, to start to think about moving up into the next stage, so, you know, you're in contemplation phase now and you're thinking about going to preparation, join Strive, right? It's £5 a month. It'll be the best £5 you've ever spent. If you're ready to take action, if you're ready to do something about this, then join the taster. Okay, that's £99, right? Join the taster. And then if you are just ready to just fucking be someone that doesn't drink alcohol and that is like something you want to do permanently, then join the intensive. That is £1,000. We've got payment plans available. Do not let money be the reason why you do not take this, because we can always sort something out or find you some help, all right? So head over to thetruthaboutalcohol.co.uk to join those experiences, or give me an email at truthaboutalcohol@gmail.com. Remember this, folks, okay? You drink alone, but you do not have to stop drinking alone. That's why we're here for you. So reach out and help. Take care of yourself.